Hello, everybody. This is Jeff J. Brown, China Rising Radio, Sinoland, and founder of Seek Truth from Facts Foundation. Today's article and podcast is entitled Philippines, Torment for Suffering Citizens Thanks to Bribed and Blackmailed Slave Politicians Owned by Uncle Slaughter. How they miss Rodrigo Duterte, the only pro-people president since, quote, independence, end of quote, in 1946. And then if you get to the article page, I have a historic a political cartoon from the late 1890s. Pictured above, U.S. President William McKinley, president from 1897 to 1901. Keeping the Filipino niggers down as Europe looks on enviously. Since nominal independence, 10 elite billionaire families, descendants of Spanish colonialists, are keeping the people militarily occupied, poor, and oppressed, which is exactly the way Uncle Slaughter likes its vassal states. And then I have another picture below that. Another historical picture from the early 1900s. Pictured above, another day in empire, another trophy shot of all the dark-skinned natives slaughtered. U.S. soldiers are proudly showing off the hundreds of Filipinos massacred in Bud Dajo on March 7, 1906. To bring the people of the Philippines to their knees, Uncle Sam exterminated over 1 million locals via massacres, forced famines, and the genocidal destruction of villages, towns, dams, irrigation systems, and crops. Populist Philippine President Rodrigo Duterte had the courage to hold this photo up at a big 2016 ASEAN summit while presenting at the podium. In his last State of the Nation address, Duterte demanded that the United States return church bells that were stolen after the 1901 Balajiga genocide, where Americans slaughtered 50,000 locals over the age of 10. Shamed into doing so, the bells were finally returned in 2018. Imperial client state leaders are supposed to know their place as racial inferiors. Talk about speaking truth to naked power. For the Philippines, I'd like to get back to the beginning of its downfall, and that would be in the late 1500s when Spain invaded it and colonized it. As in other countries around all through Latin America, where the Spanish and Portuguese went around the world, Castilian Spanish elite aristocratic Castilian Spanish families moved to the Philippines and turned it into a private plantation with the citizens, the dispossessed citizens of the Philippines working and living as feudal slaves. In Spanish, they're called latifundos. And over the centuries, 10 Castilian Spanish families took over the island. Of course, over the centuries, they intermarried with local elites. So today they have Spanish sounding names like Marcos, but they look Philippine. They look Filipino because of all the intermarriage. The Spanish were no better than any other colonialist. The Filipinos are tough people. There were uprisings and rebellions against Spain's occupation of the island, and that's where, at least in modern times, the first concentration camp started. The Spanish invented the idea of putting undesirables into concentration camps and starving them to death and working them to death. That went on until 1896, almost 300 years later, and the Filipinos really got serious about an uprising, and they called it the Philippine Revolution. And in 1898, in the interim, the United States was just dying to become an empire, or at least some elements of the society were. Joseph Pulitzer, the famous Pulitzer Prize, like he's some great journalist. He was just a yellow rag, a sensationalist journalist, but his newspaper and a senator named Hood in the U.S. Senate were really, really pushing for the United States to go to war. They had a hard on for a war. They wanted the United States to become an empire like Britain. They were green with envy that the United States, along with France and Spain and Portugal and the Netherlands, those countries pretty much had the entire world sewed up except for Russia. So they actually, in 1898, there were uprisings in Cuba. The United States sent a ship called the USS Maine down to Cuba. It's too good to be true, but there was an explosion on the ship, and that was the causus belli for the United States to go to war against Spain. Of course, if you believe that that was not a false flag, well, then okay. But it was obviously a setup deal to arouse the Americans to go to war against Spain, because Americans, at least a significant portion of Americans, have always been isolationists and had no interest in going to war. But that false flag pushed the United States into the Spanish-American War in 1898. It only lasted for a few months. Spain was at the end of its tether. It was, it had been an empire since the Jewish Italian pirate called Columbus went to the Caribbean on his first voyage, thinking he was in China. He was such a good sailor, he thought he was in China, but Queen Isabella of Spain financed his trip, so they got the booty, and from that point on, Spain raped and plundered and killed tens of millions of natives all across the Americas. So they were worn out. It was an easy war for the United States, and as a result, the United States got from Spain Cuba, Puerto Rico, and in the Pacific, those are in the Caribbean, and in the Pacific, the United States got Guam, which is now a military base for the United States, and they got the Philippines. And when the United States got there, and during the fight against the Spanish, the Americans went to the Philippines to fight the Spanish there for the few months that the war lasted. And they promised the Filipinos, they said, if you will help us defeat the evil colonial Spanish, we will give you independence. Yeah, sure. So as soon as the ink dried on the treaty, the Americans just took over from the Spanish and began exploiting and raping and plundering and pillaging the Filipinos. And they rose up against the Americans, and there was a civil war, a war of independence for the Filipinos from 1899 to 1902, and it was during that time that the United States killed a good million Filipinos through mass genocide at every level, as I pointed out in the citation for the photo above. And at that time, in 1897, the Philippines had a population of 5.6 million. So the Americans wiped out a million. That's getting close to 20% of the population. The Americans, of course, you know, eventually, you know, starved them and burned them out of their villages and starved them to death. And so the Americans took over. It was a brutal American colony from 1902 until 1946. And at that point, the Americans, World War II was over, and America was, you know, trying to, you know, show its, you know, good colors, you know, in the developing world, and couldn't have a colony. And so they, in 1946, nominally gave the Philippines independence. And it's really funny. It was such an American lapdog that the Philippines celebrated their so-called Independence Day on July 4th, the same date as the United States. And that went on until about in the 1970s, I think, when the Philippines finally changed it to some significant date in their history. And I always send happy Independence Day messages to my Filipino friends when it rolls around. In 1946, from that point on, the United States put into power Ferdinand Marcos, and of course his infamous wife Imelda. He was anti-communist. That's all that mattered. To be an American whore, all you have to do is be against communism, and you can rape, plunder, kill, massacre, starve, genocide as many people in your country as you want. But as long as you are, and you can also just be as corrupt as hell, it doesn't matter. But as long as you're anti-communist, that's all that matters. And that's the way it was for Marcos. And he was known as Mr. 10%. Everything of any value in the Philippines had to go through him, and he pocketed 10% of everything. That went on until about 1986, and the country was in such a mess because of his and all of his family and his cronies and all of the corrupt politicians and the so-called Senate and House of Representatives and all the local politicians who were corrupt, you know, and part of the Marcos gang. This country was really falling apart. So he left and flew to Hawaii in 86, and with several hundred million dollars in gold and money, just cash on pallets, jewelry, totaling several hundred million dollars, and lived out the rest of his life in Hawaii. I think it was maybe 3 or 4 years. But since he left in 86, the same Castilian family lines have run the country. And so there's the same corruption, the same misery for the people. It's just a different name. And this went on until 2016, when Rodrigo Duterte got elected president. At that time, my wife and I were in Mindanao, his home area. He was governor of Mindanao before he became president, or maybe mayor of Davao, the capital of Mindanao. So he was already in politics, and he was a bit like Donald Trump. He wasn't supposed to get elected. He's a populist, and other than the fact that he's against communism, he's actually really pretty much a socialist. But he was a maverick. He wasn't supposed to get elected, like Trump was in 2020, in 2014. He shocked the world. The first thing he announced was that to support the people, he had to get rid of the corruption. And the corruption was based on drugs. And of course, when you're talking about drugs, the CIA, which runs all the cocaine and heroin trade around the world, and and the United States military, which transports the drugs, you know, so that on military planes, so that they're not inspected. And so the U.S. Army, which runs the Filipino Army, and the CIA, you know, were basically in control of the country. He gave, I think it was a grace period of 1 month or something like that for everybody in the drug trade to get out of it. And he said, after that 1 month grace period, if we catch you, we kill you. And that was very sensational all the fake, you know, plastic liberaloid Westerners who were shocked that the government was killing drug dealers and drug distributors and stuff. But he really had no choice, because it was not just street dealers. The police were corrupt. The local politicians were corrupted by drugs. The representatives in their Congress were corrupt. The Philippine Army was corrupt. When he got there, all his entire administration had been corrupted by it. No one knows how many people he kills. Estimates, well, his government. So estimates are from 2,000 to 7,000. But he cleaned up the country, and those that were rich enough to get out, you know, just left the country. And I remember when we were there in 2016, before he got going, Filipinos told us they were afraid to go out at night. In fact, they even told us, stay close to your hotel. Don't go out at night. It's dangerous. Even going to a park, a public park, or go on a hike or something in the mountains during the daylight and the weekend was dangerous, because there were so many gangs and it was a scary place to live. And after 2 or 3 years, the place was completely safe. We talked to friends that were there after that, and they said after that the streets, you know, were busy at night. You could go take walks in the mountains and not worry about getting raped or killed or you know, beaten or stabbed or whatever. And I mean, that much I knew, but what I didn't know was all the other stuff that he did. And I will include this in the written article. And this is not some Duterte propaganda. This is actually from Gulf News from the Middle East. So they don't really have any, you know, don't have any reason to, you know, support Duterte. But here's his report card, and I'm not going to read all of these, but just look what he did in 6 years from 2016 to 2022. They rescued 4,110 children during anti-drug operations, 1.2 million people involved in illegal drugs, they surrendered because they didn't want to get killed. 24,253 villages were cleared of drugs. And then 124 military projects were completed, all this in 6 years. 229,289 hectares of land was distributed from apparently corrupt officials and corrupt business people, and it was distributed to poor Filipinos to farm and live in. 451 seaport projects completed. 2 million individuals assisted through the Malasakit centers. This is like a center where a poor Filipino can go, and if he has a problem with health, lodging, work, etc. 214 airport projects completed. 29,264 kilometers of road. 1.623 million students given free tuition. 64% drop in crime. 5,950 bridges built completed in 6 years. And then this one, the 9/11 national emergency number installed. Who owns the phone companies in the Philippines? The ten lineal Spanish families own the country, own most of the big businesses. They didn't want to do 9/11 because not if you have to install if the people can dial 9/11. Oh, we have to change our software and we have to spend more money and we don't want that. And so for years and years and years, the Filipinos were asking for 9/11. Duterte forced them to do it. 937,040 farmers who benefited from the Free Irrigation Act, and then 150,149 classrooms completed for a total of 6 million, and 109 million Filipinos got universal health care. That's the entire population. The United States doesn't have universal health care, but thanks to Rodrigo Duterte, the Filipinos do. Not only that, but the metro from Manila, the capital, through the island of Luzon. Where was all of this beat? Who was doing all of this building? The Chinese. The Chinese were doing all of this building. Because Duterte had the courage and because he knew the Americans, they don't do a damn thing except occupy the country and rob it and steal from it and just rip it off. And bring in drugs and everything else. So he kept his distance with the United States. And he went, his first foreign visit after he got elected was to Beijing to meet Xi Jinping. Yeah, and this is a country that is basically an occupied backyard, a vassal lapdog of the United States since 1902. So he went to Beijing, met Xi Jinping, and said, "We need your help. We are an agricultural country. We need you to buy our agricultural products, and we need you to help us build our infrastructure." And that's exactly what China did. She went to the National People's Congress and said, "Listen, let's get these laws passed." And all of a sudden, billions of dollars worth of goods were moving from the Philippines into China, and billions of dollars of investment from China were moving into the Philippines. And in 6 years, the lives of the Filipinos increased, the quality of their lives increased dramatically. He even had the courage. There was this, I think every 5 years, a military agreement that would allow the United States to continue occupying the Philippines with X number of bases. Actually, I think in 20 or 21, he had to leave in 2022. He actually refused to renew it. And I'm surprised they didn't assassinate him. I think there maybe was one assassination attempt known. And he actually kept the U.S. Army at bay. I remember he bought small firearms from China, like the equivalent of AK-47s from China, instead of from the United States. And you can imagine that the people love him. They absolutely love him. The only problem is that according to the Philippine Constitution, which the United States wrote, he can only be president for one term, 1 6-year term. He could not run again. And so after he was forced to leave the office, the next president and the current president is Bongbong Marcos Jr. Does that ring a bell, Marcos? And so it's Ferdinand Marcos's son. And I saw on Twitter a picture of him as a young man standing in front of one of his mother's Rolls Royces. And since he has been in office, the country has just gone to hell again. Inflation, the economy is cratering because he is a lackey, a bootlicking lackey for the Americans. He does whatever he says and does whatever the Americans tell him to say and do. And so the country now, he canceled all the infrastructure projects with the Chinese. The Americans are going to come in and do it. The Americans haven't done any infrastructure since the 1960s. They just don't do it. And Duterte was bragged a lot about private-public cooperation with Philippine government money to build roads and bridges and ports and all that, airports, etc. But the private money was coming from China. The 10 elite families in the Philippines are not going to invest a nickel in infrastructure because infrastructure is too slow of a return and a single digit at best. And billionaires don't accept single digit returns. They want double, triple digit returns. And that's what happened. Since then, there's been a lot of protests against Marcos. The Filipinos are miserable. They're back to where they were before he was in office. And so what I have done, oh, and also another thing about Duterte was the Spratly Islands. The Philippines have claimed the Spratly Islands since China became liberated by the communists in 1949. And it's really interesting. In the 19, I saw a little clip. I think it was on TikTok. I'm so sorry I didn't save it, but it was an English historian, and he talked in that little clip that was maybe 2 or 3 minutes long, that he quoted an American official back in the 1950s who said, "We know that the Philippines have no claim to the Spratly Islands. The treaty that the United States signed with Spain after the Spanish-American War specifically stated that the Spratlys did not belong to the Philippines." And then he also mentioned that the French, which of course have had a huge presence in Southeast Asia, Indochina, he said they had a dossier from that they studied the situation from 1974 to 1979, and the Philippines has no legitimate claim to the Spratlys. But the United States, of course, you know, the official in the 1950s, we want to push the Filipinos to go after the Spratlys to piss off China and frustrate China. Even though America knew it was bogus. And so the Filipinos a few years ago took an old Filipino warship and scuttled it on one of the Spratly Islands, and they put people on it to claim that island. And during his meeting with Xi Jinping, they agreed to just stop all the tension. Both countries would be able to fish in the waters of the Spratlys, and the Philippines would no longer push, you know, do stuff to piss off the Chinese. The Chinese would quit doing stuff to piss off the Filipinos. They even started doing discussing oil exploration together, the way the Chinese like to do it, win-win. But now with Bongbong Marcos, Jr., it's the same stuff that was going on, you know, sending out people to the Spratlys, running boats into the Spratlys to piss off the Chinese, et cetera. And of course, this is the Americans doing it. So, whatever Uncle Slaughter says, Bongbong Ferdinand Marcos Jr. does. What I have done is, in my article page, I have put in several references for your reading, and actually one of them is a video, and I will just go through them quickly. I highly recommend you take a look at them. Of course, it has the two pictures, and then there's actually a picture of of Rodrigo Duterte showing images of the Bud Dajo massacre, which you know, which really upset a lot of Westerners. And then I have an article that I wrote back in 2017, a year after he became president, that is very, very informative that you can read. And then I have this report card. I have it here that, so you can see it in detail. I have that here. It's huge. It's very long. And then I have an article from the South China Morning Post. And between Marcos Jr. In the U.S., it's the family ties that bind. And my title is Marcos Family, Past and Present, Are Grifting Gangsters, and they are. And it points out in the article that Marcos Jr., Bong Bong, is beholden to the Americans because his father took hundreds of millions of dollars to Hawaii in 86, but there's still $10 billion that they supposedly can't find. Well, guess who knows where that $10 billion is? The Americans know, and Marcos Jr. knows. So they've got him over a barrel. If he does anything that the United States doesn't like, they can expose him and ruin him and expose where that money is. So that's a very good article by Alex Lowe, who's a really good writer at the South China Morning Post. Then number three is a really good, it's only 13 minutes. It's a video of Duterte talking about what's going on. And he says in there, you know, the lady asks, well, when will things get better in the Philippines? And he says, well, until there's a change in the government, he said, because the current president does exactly what the Americans say. And so one of his great lines is that, you know, as the United States is pushing the Philippines into war with China, his line, the U.S. will not die for us, and that's for sure, just like they're not dying for the Ukrainians in Ukraine. And then the next article is unrealistic for Philippines to encourage Chinese investment while provoking China, hyping the China threat with the U.S. and Japan. And unfortunately, that's what's happened, is now that he canceled the BRI, the Belt and Road Initiative. He's expanding military bases across the Philippines for Uncle Slaughter, and yet he expects the Chinese to keep investing in the Philippines. Well, they're not, because they know that they could be taken away from them at any moment, because they have no faith in Bong Bong, you know, Marcos Jr. So that's why the economy is doing so terribly, because the Americans don't invest in the economy. They just steal and occupy and bring in drugs. And so the country's not doing well economically, and the Chinese are not going to come back until something changes. And then there is a Quora discussion. Thanks to Metallic Man, a China Writers Group member, sending this and asking Filipinos what was going on. And most of us, these are just quotes from Filipino citizens, most of us hate him and we want him removed. That's Bong Bong Marcos Jr. As soon as possible. There are large rallies and press conferences from the leaders of the regions of Bisaya and Visayas and Mindanao condemning Marcos for his foreign policies, drug use, corruption, and poor handling of key domestic issues, namely the economy and safety. Again, the drugs are back, and so the safety is just as dangerous as it used to be. They are demanding peaceful cooperation with China and rejection of American warmongering, including the demand for the immediate removal of American bases in our country, urging the military to remove Marcos from power and replace him with the Vice President, Sara Duterte. That's quite interesting. Bong Bong knew how popular Duterte is, and so he brought in his daughter to be Vice President, but she's pretty toothless as a Vice President. But And then criticized Marcos's handling of the economy and safety, exposed Marcos's alleged cocaine use. That wouldn't surprise me. Of course, Zelensky's a cokehead in the Ukraine. Everybody knows that Zelensky's a massive cocaine addict. And that's what the Western Empire does. They will compromise a leader either with pedophilia, child pornography, or drugs, and then they can blackmail them into doing whatever they want. Expose Marcos's corruption and theft of public funds, and reject the changing of the Constitution by Marcos and his allies. So I really feel sorry for the Filipinos. My wife and I became good friends with a number of them. We were teaching in China from 2010 until 2017. They're in a lot of international schools around the world because they're very talented and they're very professional. And so we had a number of our colleagues who were Filipinos. And they're just lovely people, and they do not deserve what's happening to their country, but this is an unfortunate example of what the people, the 99%, pay, the horrible price they pay when you are a U.S. Prostituted vassal, which is not the way the Chinese do business, which is why the BRI and everywhere China goes in Africa and South America and Asia, the countries and the people love to work with the Chinese because they actually invest and they don't overthrow governments and put in stooges and they don't corrupt stooges and they don't occupy the country militarily. So I wish my Filipino friends the best, and hopefully Rodrigo Duterte, he's too old to run again. If he could come back again after not running consecutively, maybe his daughter might try to run next time. It'll be interesting to see what happens. This is Jeff J. Brown, China Raj Radio Sinoland, and founder of the Seek Truth from Sex Foundation, signing out. Bye-bye.